Well, good morning. Beautiful fall day that the Lord has given us to come together and worship Him this morning. Thankful for your presence being with us as we are looking into the book of John, and we are in the sixth chapter. I believe somewhere around verse 11. Let's see, maybe we got a little further than that. Probably right in there, yeah. Actually, we finished up down through 14. So we're about 14 this morning and where we left off last time. Okay. The last time we, like I say, we pretty much finished up the story of the five loaves and two fishes. We had talked about some about the difference in the accounts between John's account and the synoptic gospels. We talked about the loaves and the fishes, and I think we ended up, I think, talking about how Jesus sets the example for us in being frugal. So that's what leftovers are for. So we get leftovers. We shouldn't complain. But anyway, Jesus had them gather them up. And Jesus could have actually supplied any amount of the food that he wanted. We talked a little bit about that. But and then we talked about the differences between the synoptic gospels accounts of the loaves and fishes, and whether the boy had the fishes or whether the disciples had the fishes. And the way they read it, the synoptic gospel seems to indicate that the apostles or the disciples had the fishes. But anyway, we talked about that, and we ended up at verse 14, and I'll read from there. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, "This is of a truth that prophet which should come into the world." When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down to the sea. They entered into a ship, and they went over the sea towards Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus had not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew, so that when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing nigh to the ship, and they were afraid. But he said to them, "It is I. Be not afraid." Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at land where they went. The day following, when the people stood on the other side of the sea, saw that there was none other boats there, save that one wherein his disciples had entered, that Jesus went not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit, there came other boats from Tiberias near to the place where they did eat the bread, and after the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. When they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when comest thou?" I think we'll go ahead and stop there. There's a couple of things I think that we might notice before we go any further. In verse 14, where it talks about that prophet, we spoke about that earlier. And then when we get down to verse 17, at least the New King James read, they wrote toward Capernaum. Not necessarily that that's where they landed, but they wrote that direction. Toward Capernaum, that's where they were going. So, anyway, we have these 5,000 men, and these women are there, and they're going to raise up, and they're going to see that take Jesus and make him their king. And of course, this doesn't have anything to do with God's plan. They were going to make him a earthly type king. And the thing is, they didn't know it, but Jesus was already their king. But they are not spiritually minded. And this is the problem that Jesus has been dealing with his disciples and the crowds and the multitudes that are flocking to him. They just can't seem to get past thinking carnally and not spiritually. And Jesus has work with this for quite some time. They want an earthly king like the kings of the earth, but he frustrates their desires to do this, and he leaves them. He dismisses the apostles, and he goes up into the mountain. So he's dismissed the crowd, sent his disciples away in the boat, and he went up in the mountain. I believe it's Mark that says to pray, or at least he went up there. I'm sure that he went up there to pray. Some have said he also had received the news of John the Baptist's death. So that could have been another reason. So then we come to the account of Jesus walking on the water. And this is an account that's also found in Matthew chapter 14, verse 23, Mark chapter 6, and verse 45. Now, the Apostle John, in his writing here, he provides basically the briefest account of this event. Mark, Matthew, they go into more detail. John says they got into the boat, went over to the sea to Capernaum. Mark chapter 6, verse 45 says that they were to go to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he sent the people away. Then if we go to Matthew chapter 14 and verse 34, it says that when they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret, or something like that. But so we have three different places listed here. And there are some that have concluded that Matthew 14 and John contradicts John 6:17 and Mark 6:45. But if I was an artist, I could probably draw you a little better map on the board, because we're going to be looking at three or four different places here. And I think I'll go ahead and, if you'll bear with me just a minute, put you a rough map up here. And one of the reasons that is that there are going to be some confusion here, because there are actually two Bethsaidas, although on some of the maps I look at, you can only find one. But anyway, we'll get to that in just a second. Now, if you recall last week, I said that the Sea of Galilee kind of looked like a heart, not a Valentine heart, but a human heart. So all we have the Jordan River up coming down in, and it also flows out of the sea. We have Capernaum is right here. This is a little wider than it probably is, but we have Bethsaida, we have Gennesaret, we have a Bethsaida over here, however you spell it, and we have Tiberias. So when Mark says that they went to Bethsaida, he would be talking about this Bethsaida, which is known of Galilee. This Bethsaida is known as Bethsaida Julius. That might clear up some of the confusion in the two accounts. Now, suffice to say, if you read Josephus says there was never two Bethsaidas, there was only one Bethsaida, and it wasn't in Galilee. But we have instances of towns being named differently in the same names in different places in the New Testament. And also in John, I believe it's in chapter 12, verse 21, the Apostle John refers specifically to the Bethsaida of Galilee. So who are you going to believe? You're going to believe the Apostle John, or you're going to believe Josephus? But anyway, this causes some people some confusion. I don't know that it needs to. But anyway, this is the situation we have here. So you can't get your Bethsaidas mixed up. Anyway, the account where it says they landed at Gennesaret. Well, anyway, this is really a lot closer to Capernaum that I'm showing it here, and then Bethsaida is right in the middle. But Gennesaret is not very far from Capernaum, as near as I can tell. So when they talk about landing here or landing there, it's all in the general vicinity. A lot of times it's going to depend on how the wind was blowing. And, They didn't have a GPS, so they could have navigated up by the stars, I guess, if you could have seen them. But anyway, I think that's something. So we have these three accounts. We have different opinions as to how the disciples left and for Capernaum. Some people say that there are about three accounts. Jesus could have told them to wait for him on the eastern shore there. He could have, you know, that might explain why it was not until the fourth watch that Jesus walked on the water to him, which would have been about 3 a.m. in the morning. In Matthew's account in chapter 14 reads, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Well, that seems pretty matter of fact. They were to get in the boat and go. The verb while in Matthew's account can also be rendered until. So some people try to make the case that he waited there until after he sent the crowds away. But anyway, some people also say, well, they skirted the shore up and down waiting for him to come. But I think it's pretty plain that he told them to leave and that they did. And so, and like I said, there's a great many scholars that maintain there never was two Bethsaidas, but, you know, this is part of that. There's no end of the writing of books. There's all kinds of people that you can read that don't seem to agree on the account. But anyway, back to walking on the water, they got caught out at sea in a storm, and one of those sudden storms that comes up because of the topography of the Sea of Galilee. And of course, if you've ever been at sea in a storm, it's a really scary thing, and they were in a small boat. I've been in a storm on the sea in a bigger boat, much bigger boat than they had, and it's still really scary. A couple monsoons. So, and when it's dark, it makes it even worse. It really seems to make it worse when it's dark outside. But anyway, they're caught in this storm and it was dark, and, they're rowing trying to continue on. And so, this is where we're going to have the account of Jesus walking on the sea, out to them. Now, John's account, again, difference from Matthew's account in chapter 14 and Mark's account in chapter 6. John's account is very brief, and it seems to emphasize that the calming effects that Jesus had on the disciples. And then Matthew and Mark's account include the fact that the disciples thought that Jesus was a ghost. And Mark also added that they didn't understand about the loaves because their hearts were hardened. And I'm not sure why that's there. It looks like an odd thing to bring up there. But anyway, he says they didn't understand about the loaves because their hearts were hardened. It's chapter 6, verse 52. In addition, Matthew adds the incident with Peter wanting to walk on the water to Jesus, and ends with the disciples worshiping Jesus, and they're declaring that truly you are the Son of God. And so I guess you might say this made a believer out of them. it was something that was... But there was also a second miracle that occurred here. As soon as Jesus got in the boat, they were immediately at the other side. And so on the west shore. So we have the miracle of the walking on the water. We have actually a second miracle here of being immediately on the shore. We would estimate that they were probably about 3 to 4 miles across the lake at this time. At the point that they were crossing was about 5 miles. So they were a good ways across it. And I'm not sure why Mark added that not understanding about the loaves of what it has to do with this, but apparently it does have something to do with it, or it wouldn't be there. You know, maybe It didn't prepare them to expect any other miracles to follow. Maybe they weren't expecting a miracle like this. On the other hand, they had been in a storm once before. Jesus was in the boat with them. And this is in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 25. And a storm came up and he calmed the storm. Now, it's very interesting what they say there. They said, who can this be? That even the winds and the sea obey him. So they have had this experience once before, just in a little different way. And we need to remember, when we go to Matthew's account, what has Jesus already done? Well, he's cleansed the leper. He's healed the centurion's servant. He's healed Peter's mother-in-law. And he's done several more healings after the sun set on the Sabbath, according to Matthew. And yet they still have to ask, who can this be? So, you know, I've often wondered about the mindset of the disciples, and especially those that would be apostles, how long it takes them to get spiritually minded. Actually, it takes right up to after Jesus' ascension, because even just before the ascension, they are asking, will you now restore the kingdom? I believe it's the kingdom of David to Israel. I believe it's the way that reads. They seem to be very slow of understanding to me. And maybe that's not being fair to them, but it seems a little slow to me. Now, Matthew and Mark's account also say that Jesus would have passed them by, and they supposed him to be a ghost. And John says Jesus came near the boat and they were afraid. So I think what we have here is the writers relating things from their own perspective, and in their own way in describing what happened here. And one of the things that we have to remember is that they were in sort of a excited state at the time this happened. They were in a storm. They were afraid they were going to drown. And but they have their own way in describing what happened here and how they got their information. The thing that's interesting to me, too, is Matthew said they believed he was a ghost. So apparently they believe in ghosts. So anyway, this gives us a glimpse into their thinking and their thought processing, and maybe a glimpse of just how far Jesus is going to have to go in teaching them. He is going to have to get a lot of garbage out to get the Spirit in. And that's not an unusual thing if you're speaking with people about spiritual things, about Christ. There were a couple of other references that I would like to read about. One's in Proverbs chapter 30, verse 4, that kind of deals with walking on the water and overcoming nature. In Proverbs chapter 30, verse 4, we have a verse that speaks to this. It reads, who has ascended into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fist? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name? And what is his son's name, if you know? Now, another reference, you may not think these are appropriate, but anyway, we have Job's remark in chapter 9 and verse 8. He says, he alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. So we have these verses that show the power of Jesus, the power of God. And so we have references to these type things in other places. Now I think I'll probably stop right there. Let's see. We should be down to about verse 22. Yeah. Do you have any comments, any questions, any corrections that you'd like to add? Jack has a microphone if you'd like to make any comments or contribute. Okay. Then let's go ahead and pick up at verse 22. It says, the day following, when the people which stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was none other boat there, save the one where his disciples went in, not with his disciples, but that his disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit they came other boats from Tiberias to the place where they did eat bread, and after the Lord had given thanks. Now, apparently word had gotten down to Tiberias somehow as to what Jesus had done. And the way I read it, they took boats from Tiberias over to Bethsaida Julia. And that's how I think perhaps that happened. And so he wasn't there. His disciples wasn't there. So they got back into the boats and they came to Capernaum looking for Jesus. And so Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perishes, but for that meat which endureth to everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give to you. For him hath God the Father sealed." Then they said to him, "What shall we do that we might work the works of God?" Jesus answered and said to them, "This is the work of God, that you believe on him who he has sent." Therefore, they said therefore to him, "What sign showest thou then that we may see and believe you? What doest thou work?" "Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, and is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Then Jesus said to them, "Verily, verily, I say to you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." And then they said to him, "Lord, evermore, give us this bread." And Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger. He that believes on me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father gives me shall come to me, and him that comes to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will, which has sent me, that all which he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again in the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up in the last days." So here we have again Jesus pointing to himself as being the Christ, of being worthy of worship, of being sent by God the Father. And he is just reinforcing everything he has said before, and he's still pushing here. He's still pushing against the Pharisees and the scribes and so on. But anyway, we pick up the events of the following day, that is the day following the feeding of the miracle of the loaves and the fishes, the walking on water. And what verses 22 through 25 tell us is that there were a great number of people trying to get to where Jesus was. They were trying to catch up with him, and they were actually, many of them, astonished how he got to Capernaum. They couldn't figure that out. He didn't get in the boat. To walk around the shore would have taken quite some time. So they couldn't figure that out. But what does Jesus do in verse 26? He just basically ignores their question. He doesn't even try to answer it. And it's very doubtful that they would have believed that he walked on water. Then the miraculous the event of the vote being immediately at the shore. Probably wouldn't have believed that anyway. But he uses this opportunity to tell them just how shallow they are, how shallow their thinking is, because they sought him for the food. Now, what he's telling them here is their motives are purely selfish. And so, in Matthew chapter 14, verse 30, beginning in verse 35, he adds, "When the people heard that Jesus was in Capernaum again, they spread the word to all the surrounding territory, and that people came and begged Jesus that they might touch the hem of his garment. And as many of them that touched it were healed." So apparently this news of the woman that had the issue of blood and her story or the event of her touching the hem of Jesus' garment and being healed, people are practically overrunning themselves trying to get close to Jesus so they can touch the hem of his garment. Mark also adds to this event. He says that when the people heard where Jesus was, that they carried people on their sick beds, and that when he entered the villages, they laid the sick in the marketplace, and the people begged to touch the garment of Jesus. So, just as Jesus did with the Samaritan woman with the living water, he tells them not to work for bodily food, for food that will sustain their flesh, but to work for spiritual food is what he's trying to tell them. And as we get further along in this chapter and the next chapter, we're going to see how difficult a task he was having getting through to the people that this was, he's speaking spiritually. And in one case, he uses the actual "eat my flesh and drink my blood" using words, trying to convey to these people that he's talking spiritually, where later, of course, he will institute the Lord's Supper with symbols, the fruit of the vine and the bread. But anyway, we have this case where, as he did with the Samaritan woman, he talked about the living water. And he tells them not to work for this bodily food, but for spiritual food. And he's trying to tell them that he is that spiritual food because God has commissioned him as the Messiah. And God has authenticated his mission by the works that God has given him to do. And so then we have this exchange with the people. They wanted to know what to do in order to earn this everlasting food. In other words, what works can we do to please God to get this food? And although it's kind of hard to think, they are talking about food that will sustain their body. And he's trying to tell them, no, that's not the case. So what does he tell them? He tells them very simply. He's already told them the answer was to believe in him. Believe in me. And so apparently this has always been too simple for people. We have had throughout the years and centuries people that invented all kinds of works to attain what Jesus is after here. We've had pilgrimages, we've had penance, we've had mutilations, and they have just not heeded this simple thing that Jesus has asked them to do, that believe he is who he says he is, and their reward would be everlasting life. And just believing in Jesus as the Son of God is that one comprehensive work that satisfies Jesus and God. Now, it's not to say once you have believed and obeyed, then you need to do something with it. But that's all going to come later. So, after all Jesus has done, this feeding of the 5,000 and all, he just completed, what do they do next? Well, if we go on down a little further, now we may not have read that far. But anyway, they're seeking a sign. They want a sign. Well, Jesus has already performed many signs. As a matter of fact, all those people bringing people to touch the hem of his garment, well, you know, what more sign do you need? Well, they need another sign. And that just shows you the condition or the thought process of these folks. So, they wanted another sign. And you know, just like we talked about some time ago, the scribes and Pharisees wanting to pull their hair out because of what Jesus is telling them. I kind of get the idea here that Jesus probably would like to pull his hair out. But they needed a sign to believe. They needed a sign to believe it. And at this point, it seems curious that they would ask for another sign. And when we get into verse 32-33, we see that they compare Jesus to Moses. Now, Moses fed a great many people in the wilderness for 40 years with manna. And yet, Moses is supposed to be less than the Messiah. Jesus fed 5,000, but he only did it for one day, and that was with barley bread. So this man is less than Moses, and consequently, he can't be the Messiah. I believe perhaps that is the way their thinking went. Now, maybe it isn't, but when you talk about Moses and feeding, then we talk about Jesus and feeding, it looks to these people like Jesus has done less than Moses did, so how can he be the Messiah? And I may be all wet there. But anyway, they're not going to take any chances. Perhaps God is sending a better bread. So they say, give us this bread. It was kind of like the woman at the well in the living water. She said, give me this water. But the idea I think that she had there was that she wasn't ever going to have to come back twice a day and pack water back to the village. But anyway, perhaps God's sending a better bread, so let's not take any chances. Give us this bread. But we see that this asking for a sign of authenticity is seen really throughout the time of Jesus' ministry here on earth. I think it's probably expected, the Jews expected that any miraculous work would be accompanied by a sign, perhaps. This seemed to be their way of thinking. And so, if we go back to John 2:18, it reads, so then the Jews answered and said to him, what sign do you show us since you do these things? So it seems like every time he tries to teach them something, they want another sign. They want another miracle. David?
The Jews at this time interpreted everything literally.
Right.
They were looking for someone greater than Moses. Moses had physically led them out of the bondage, slavery in Egypt, led them through the desert. So he was the greatest in their eyes.
Right.
So when Jesus came along, they expected the Messiah to deliver them from another form of bondage, Roman rule.
Right.
And everything they looked at and everything they saw or heard, they interpreted into literal earthly concepts.
Yeah, and this is what Jesus is trying to pull them away from. Very good. Thank you.
Paul, you know, it's hard to understand something that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like us trying to tell somebody what heaven's going to be like because we really don't know.
Right.
And all they had to look at was physical. They didn't have anything spiritual at that time. And like David said, God set up his kingdom physically. He put them in a physical land. He gave them a physical king. They didn't know anything about spiritualness. I couldn't understand things if I don't know something about them. Mm-hmm. The old phrase, it's Greek to me. I mean, this was all Greek to them. Jesus is setting the foundation for what's going to come later, where the Holy Spirit comes upon them and their eyes and their mind is opened up to it. But it's just impossible. I think it's impossible for any of us to understand things we don't know.
Well, they were certainly having a difficult time. I think if I seen someone raise someone from the dead, somebody from the dead, miraculously produce enough food to feed perhaps up to 20,000 people, I don't think it'd be quite as hard for me to grasp what's trying to be said, but.
The rich one making your king?
Well, they tried to make him their king. And that's what they tried to do. Well, we're out of time, so Lord willing, we will pick up there next Lord's Day. Thank you.